Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are, whenever you are, listeners. This is Jerome back with Fundamental Principle, and on with me is our special guest, Sam, from Full House. And I believe you have a couple other projects going on, Sam, but I know you mainly from,
yes,
from Full House. We can talk about that in just a second, but you are a father of a large Catholic family, a longtime dissident. And podcaster. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners about you and your stuff?
Well, yeah, it's been a long journey that started in high school. You know, when we talked about doing this, and let me thank you for having me on. We've been friends. I've known you for a while, but we've never really sat down and had a just one-on-one good conversation. And I really feel that you and I probably could have some really great long conversations. So I hope this will be the first of many.
Well, you're welcome back anytime.
And this, you know, whether on a podcast or just chit-chatting, because I think there's a lot there, a lot of richness and depth that we both come to appreciate. And when I thought about coming on here with you, I several times resisted the urge, had my yellow notepad, started making notes, and you know, I don't want to make a lecture. I don't want to make a book report. I don't want to make I'm trying to foist my views, you know, trying to sell my views or something. I thought this would be just best to be a good conversation where different important points come up. So I'll give the extremely short thumbnail sketch to answer your question. I got involved more with the music of the skinhead scene starting from my teenage years. That's what drew me in. as time went on, I became more formally involved, you might say. When I was in college, I was exposed to the Christian identity message, which really resonated with me and continues to inform my views throughout the years. And then maybe about 7 or 8 years after that, I got involved with the traditional Catholic scene, Tridentine Mass, that type of thing. And so I have a lot of thoughts along those lines as well. Through those years, I've tried to be open to having children. And I did have children. They are all adults now, you might say. One has just turned 18, but the rest of them are all older. And some of them are very accomplished, and some of them are, you know, figuring life out yet. And but I've been fortunate through my life to be employed professionally in a career that I like, in a profession that I like. And I have, I've realized a certain level of success in it, though so far that success has not been translated into financial success, which if you have a family, you're going to be kind of on the broke side, let's put it that way. Also, if you're any kind of decent person, you put yourself out there, occasionally you get taken advantage of too. And you can't get too bent out of shape about that, because that's what life is about. What is the saying? He who dares wins, right? So that's the short of it. You know, back about 10 years ago, these pool party things were kicking off around the country, and in Chicago was and is a rather large and very rich group of people, various backgrounds, and I got involved with them. That started up. We've remained very active in doing those types of things, even though you would say we're independent now. When the Fatherland podcast came along, I was started appearing on there, and you know, I've been on different podcasts through the years, and I continue to get involved in projects here and there, sometimes with Skinhead Music or, you know, other things, Full House. I do the Manor Bun Dispatch, you know, so a lot of it is just like, I don't say no to things probably, maybe I should more often, but so that's how a lot of these things come about, is just by, you know, looking to be involved and do things. Yeah.
Well, I think it's pretty important. We should note that Bishop Williamson, the best bishop in the world, has just had a brain hemorrhage. And I'm just going to say, we're recording this on January 24th, 2025. So I'm just going to lead us an ave real quick for the good bishop, for his full health and recovery. Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Iesus.
Sancta Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et in hora mortis nostri. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. So I we are friends and we've known each other for quite a while, you know, but I think it's important to do what you're doing, and that is both be correct religiously, right? Mm-hmm. Because you see it all the time. You know, both of us have been active in, I would guess, identitarian spaces for many years. And
yeah,
you see zealous young men who love the truth, right?
Yes.
Constantly get turned off from Catholicism, mm-hmm. because what they've been told is Catholicism just isn't, it's lying to them about really important stuff. Yeah. You know, the church has to acknowledge the reality of race, the reality of the JQ, the reality of male-female sex differences, because they're true. And if you lie to people in the name of God, you are not only calling God a liar, because our Lord himself said, I am the truth, right? But mm-hmm. but you're also and putting forth false idols, right? You know, these are grave sins. But yes. also driving away people who if you told them the truth, would love you more, right? You know,
yeah.
you and I both probably know at least 20 people that have said to us, like, man, if it weren't for, you know, I'd be Catholic except for this left-wing thing that, you know, the anti-Latinists or what have you, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know how you stay Catholic. And it's like, well, because mm-hmm. I'm a traditionalist, and I understand that, like, this ersatz fake, you know,
yeah.
Novus Ordo Mass, that if it's even legitimate, you know, if it's even valid,
mm-hmm.
Is not the full, you know, it's like, you know, like you can have butter, like you can have like real grass fed butter, and you can have margarine. Margarine's still a real thing, right?
Yeah.
But it's the, you know,
like a facsimile.
Right. Yeah. It's a facsimile of the real thing. And
yeah. Well, it, you know, my approach, or the way I come to it, is there may be just a little different emphasis than maybe you hear from other people, because I get this type of comment sometimes. People will say to Catholics, especially the more fervent ones, oh, so you think anyone who's not Catholic is going to hell? That's real nice. Oh, so what do you think about me? This and that. And I say, well, I'm not looking at it that way. You know, I'm interested in saving my own soul, which is the only one I can save. And so through my years, I've tried to pay attention to what matters, what makes actual sense, what things I can actually verify myself and can be sure about, and what am I going to do for my own soul and then for the souls of the people in my family? That's the way I'm looking at it. And that's so when somebody will pick at the thing, I said, you know, there's a vast amount of this Catholic religion that, I mean, I don't think any one of us should pretend to even understand it all, because it's so vast over 2,000 years, you know, and the things, you know, and I stumble across things that the saints have written all the time, or even things in the Bible that are very startling. And so, like, you got to approach it kind of like with that humbleness, and And so when I, as far as the way I deal with other people, whether they would be Protestants or pagans or just somebody of no religion, you know, it's the law is written in our people's hearts. And there are people who recognize the natural law, even though they are not Catholics, let's say. And if I'm going to have a next door neighbor, I'd like to have somebody like that, that recognizes the morality of the natural law compared to somebody who's got other ideas, I guess.
Well, this is one of those things that is a constant problem with traditional Catholics. Their politics are all wrong. And the problem with many of white identitarians who understand the political moment we're in, their religious stuff is off. And that's hence the nature of the project, you know, I there's a lot to respect about E. Michael Jones. I've interviewed a doctor, but this notion that race isn't real is it's absurd. It's absurd on its face. It's laughable.
Nothing
would destroy your credibility. And to your point about the natural law, right? Until our people are permitted to discriminate based off the content of their character, we will never be able to build anything, because the second we build something good for ourselves, it will be stolen from us.
Right.
And we have to discriminate against foreigners and non-whites who are just stealing from us. Because anytime we build something good, and you've seen if you've seen one, you've seen 100 of, you know, take one, leave one, egg boxes, free, take food if you need it, right? And you know, white people kind of ashamedly like have to take a free eggs or something because they're hard up. Things have been very difficult for me for the last few years. The inflation's been very hard. You know, it's been, especially if you have a family.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know how it is, how hard it is to feed 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 children.
Sure.
When, you know, mom is at home and dad is the only one working, right? Like, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. Go hungry so your children can eat. And
basically,
you should, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have any money and you don't have, right? So you have to, and if you don't recognize the reality that, you know, white people will, secular white people, indifferent white people, Protestant white people, whatever, just Catholic white people will, take what they need and not take advantage of this free riding system. And the second, and you see it all over Europe, you've seen it all over America, right? The second there's something free, blacks in particular, but all non-whites just take everything they can and they don't get anything.
They're like what the Bible describes as locusts.
Very much. Very much. And this the problem with the traditionalist movement right now is that we want to think that, well, just because, you know, this family goes to the Latin Mass, they're instantly better people. It's like, no, we should be able to build for ourselves, by ourselves, without interference from outsiders. So you know me,
right?
And you know that I'm interested in like land development and urban planning and that sort of thing. And without getting too doxy, you're in the greater Chicagoland area. You've talked about that quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's a classic two flat is an apartment building in Chicago, a style of apartment building. I believe it's called a two flat, where there's this, single floor apartment buildings that are adequate for like a young family or you know, a family without much means, where you've got like three bedrooms on a long plan without much yard and stuff, but it's housing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have a two flat where grandma and grandpa are downstairs and, you know, mom and dad are upstairs, or vice versa or whatever. And your whole neighborhood is, you know, those kind of housing.
Yeah.
And you have an ethnically homogenous community. That allows you to build a bunch of capital up. That allows you to, you
yeah.
know, like, have kids, and then maybe if you need a babysitter, or you need to do, or dad's got to put an extra shift at work, and, you know, he can just leave. He can just say, you know, I got to go to work. You know, I called your grandma. You just go downstairs
yeah.
to your grandma's or whatever, right? It allows you to live a Catholic life and have a community by not having to
yeah,
let
well,
strangers into your house. But because of our evil mm-hmm. civil rights laws, right? If,
yes.
you know, a bunch of Negroes from deepest, darkest Africa move into the build, you know, move into the apartment next door, you can't say no. You got to share,
right.
you know, and like, well, but what if they're going to steal? What if they're going to attack me? What if, you know, like, and this is, these are legit
yeah.
real fears that are, you know, way more likely to happen from non-whites than whites. And until you accept that
no.
reality and deal with that reality, you are preventing white people, Catholics, from organizing in their own self-defense.
Yeah, and that's where what the faith is telling these people in this year or 20 years ago or 50 years ago or maybe even a lot longer than that is that these niggers are children of God, you know, and if they're children of God, then, well, we can't prevent them from living in a certain neighborhood. We can't prevent their intermarriage with our children or anything else, you know? So that's what has motivated me through my years of thinking about the faith and the way I grew up and things like that, where I'm not giving standing to the current explanation. I don't respect the current order because the current order has screwed me over my whole life and made life very difficult and dangerous in so many ways that, you know, if Jorge Bergoglio says something, that, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me. This guy is part of the elite enemies as much as anybody.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's probably yeah. a Freemason. He's certainly a Peronist. I wouldn't be surprised mm-hmm. if he was a homosexual. He's certainly not a Catholic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let him teach my children, like, beginning catechism.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing you run into, and it's... You want to be a little gentle when you talk to the average Catholic. I will say it probably sounds very condescending to put it that way, but you have to put it kind of gentle and start somewhere to explain. Like, have you ever heard of the Jesus? What was it called? The Jesus Seminar from the early 90s.
Yeah.
So this is like a, you know, collection of scholars. Jorge Bergoglio subscribes to this, that they say that most of the sayings of Jesus, or he didn't say any of those things. Many of the stories, like the virgin birth, the resurrection, the many of the familiar stories that we know and love, those are all accretions. The actual, he just said this not too long ago, you know, the real gospel would be a very thin book, and it's been added to and added to many times.
Right,
that's
right.
What these people believe.
Right. Well, and, you know, you dropped a hard R there, and I don't mind. You know, we just published a show where the archives, where I talked about the fact that there are people wearing miters right now who are more upset or more offended by someone saying nigger or beaner or faggot than someone taking our Lord's name in vain. You know, like well,
yeah.
which one of these violates the commandment of God? Right. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm a saint or anything, but like if you're not willing to not, you know, if you think, yeah, like the Jesus Seminar stuff, or, you know, Bonhoeffer, who was a traitor, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah, there you go.
But mm-hmm. Bonhoeffer and Martin Luther King were both heretics. They weren't
yeah.
Christians in any meaningful sense, right? Like, if you think that these guys were their denial of the virgin birth, denial of the resurrection,
mm-hmm.
you know, denial of the creed. Like, this is not like fine points of soteriology, or, you know, like you know, the distinction Feeney versus the other people, you know, like extraclasium nullus, right? Like, this is not some obscurantist doctrine that people
point that we are going to have to argue about or something.
Right. Now this is like basic stuff. And these people just aren't Christians. So why do you care what they, like, you're letting them tell you what to think about Christianity? These people,
right?
Yeah, they're worse. You know, like, honestly, I would rather deal with like a Norris pagan who is straightforward about their beliefs and tells me I think I'm wrong, and here's why. Like, you know, you could
have an actual conversation with somebody like that,
right? Well, and I know that for them, you know, they have their nine virtues, the first of which is courage. So I know that I can tell him, like, hey, you have to be brave.
Right.
You know, you have to have virtues. None of these, you know, these sodomite clerics, they have no virtues at all. Right. They're just bad, evil people. They're not, you know, they're worse. They're worse than you know, they're wolves in sheep's clothing. You know, they're wolves pretending to be shepherds. And that's the worst thing you could be. You know, you could be a traitor and to lead little children astray the way they do is far worse than just being an open enemy of God.
They're deceiving. They're deceivers. If that's how they really believe, they could go join some other religion, some Unitarian thing or something that believes that way.
Just go be a Satanist with George Soros. Like, you know, like if you're like a, like if you are just what's his the homosexual Jew from the World Economic Forum. I know that I just painted a very broad brush, but the
is there just one?
Yeah, I was gonna say there's several, but he looks like Nosferatu. I can't remember his name, but. You know, like if you are just like a gay Jew that hates Christianity and you say so, like that's at least like you're not lying. Whereas these clerics, these modern clerics who just say that, you know, they slather their satanic Freemasonry, you know, homosexuality stuff in Jesus butter and lie to you.
They double talk. They double talk.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's no surprise that people are turned off to religion in general, and especially the Catholic religion. Like I said, it's I'm not always looking at this as like that I'm part of this big thing. I'm looking at this as, this is something I'm discovering and trying to follow myself, because I can't trust the things that I'm told today. So I have to figure it out, and I have to do my own research, so to speak, and listen to others. And I will also freely say that the things people hear me say sometimes, they hear me say something they like, and oh, that's actually something somebody else said. I've been taught by people for sure, and I've tried to learn, and maybe the way I put it together, that's my own spin on it. But I freely would acknowledge some, you know, different important people from history that inform my views. But you know, even I presume, I don't want to say it in a presumptuous way, but you are a Mein Kampf enjoyer?
Of course, yeah. I mean, you've known that about me
for
years.
Yes. Like, yeah. Well, I don't know if we're going to say that just like that on the show, but, well, you know, when you... Go ahead.
Well, here's my thoughts on the matter, like, the Industrial Revolution fundamentally changed man's economic relationship to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you know, basically for most of human history, from the agricultural revolution to roughly the American Civil War, almost like maybe 1840, maybe 1850, depending on where, you know, the vast majority of the world were like small farmers who, like you could pluck someone from any time, like any time in England from like the year -1000 to, you know, 1840, And aside from some religions and stuff, like, they would basically understand the way the world worked. They'd be like, oh, hey, that's a cool idea. They'd see a new plow or they'd see this new idea, but they'd fundamentally understand it. And the Industrial Revolution changed everything. And that's why the revolutions of 1848 were so bloody. But effectively, you had three options that were available that were contesting the Second World War. You had capitalism, you had Bolshevism, and you had fascism. And this isn't my opinion. This is Dr. Paul Gottfried, you know, eminent political scientist, Jewish guy, but, you know, degree from Yale, I believe, right? Longtime college professor. He just said, you know, fascism is just the liturgical Christian response to Bolshevik undermining of society. And when you look at who lined up on one side of that conflict versus who lined up on the other side of that conflict, Quisling was a Lutheran in Norway.
Yeah,
Metaxas was Greek Orthodox. Codrianu was Romanian Orthodox.
Tiso,
yeah, was a Catholic priest even. Mosley was, I believe he was an Anglican. Petain was a French Catholic. Salazar was Catholic. Franco was Catholic. De Grelle was Catholic. Adolf Hitler was Catholic. Mussolini was Catholic. Padre Pio says Mussolini is a saint in heaven, so who am I to argue with Padre Pio? Right?
Yeah.
And the soulless, rapacious materialists, Jewish ideologies of capitalism and Marxism tried to destroy Christendom, and they very nearly succeeded.
Well, and now
they've it's only, you know, like a guttering, like a small ember on a windy night sort of thing that has survived. But you know, I don't have to, I mean, not that I have particular, you know, like, oh, you know, like if you are more upset with you know, if you can't see that, excuse me, given the parties to that conflict, that the Christian side was the axis. I have not, like,
right.
You're just wrong. Like, look at what happened, you know, like tens of millions of dead Christians. So that the Bolsheviks could slaughter, without World War II, right? Without World War II, the Chinese, you know, Chiang Kai-shek was a Christian. I think he was a Methodist, but General Chiang Kai-shek was a Christian nationalist. And without the support of the Russians, Mao would have lost that war, and tens of millions of Chinese people wouldn't have starved to death in the Great Leap Forward. And without Mao's support, the killing fields of Cambodia wouldn't have happened, and the war in Vietnam wouldn't have happened. And, you know, in 19, I pointed this out on previous programs, but it's always worth repeating. In 1910, right before King Edward the Peacemaker died, right before Western civilization shot itself in the head in the First World War, every soul on earth, just about, was under the sovereignty of a Christian prince.
Yeah.
Right? And after 1945, only Iberia stood left.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I would add to your the way you're describing the way that one era is given way to another, you mentioned in the 1800s and factors of Industrial Revolution and so forth. I think that concurrent with that time and a driver of the spirit of this age that is persisting since then is in 1791, there was the beast was freed from the pit, and the Napoleon emancipated the Jews. And I think that is what has animated all these
absolutely
bad things.
I put it this way elsewhere, and I want to get your opinion, because you're the guest and I think you have a lot of insight on this particular issue. But if you insist on trying to explain politics without talking about the nature of the, of men and women, the nature of the, of race, and especially the nature of the Jew.
Mm-hmm.
You are trying to explain physics without using Newton's laws of motion.
Yeah,
you are just no, wrong. You can't do anything without it. You can't do anything.
And until God really reveals this, like we can only do so much. Yes, we should try to tell people. Most of all, number one, we should convince ourselves and convince our families of the truth. But it is like there's a veil over people's eyes or in their ears or whatever, with the right analogy there. And you can go in a group of people, or if you work around enough people, you can sense that it's 1 out of 100, 1 out of 1,000 people that is free enough in their mind to have a conversation about these things. Most people, they just don't have the intellect or the personal courage or the confidence to stand against the crowd, whatever it is. it's really hard to explain these things. And that's why I keep coming back to, in many ways for me, this is like a solitary journey in a large way. I've talked about this before that, you know, there have been times I can remember being in college and I'm having some kind of ridiculous argument with a fellow white American red-blooded male, and we're having the dumbest argument about some obvious thing about whatever, gun control or something, homos, whatever the topic is. And for many years I felt like that, like you say, dissident. We're dissidents. This is how we live. We live on the outside. We don't expect to be. We expect to lose friendships and things like that over these issues. We expect to be kicked out of organizations or whatever it is, you know. But in recent years, you know, like with this last 10 years, the podcast era, I will call it, or this thing stemming from the alt-right, you know, there has been a sense of like the regular guy is getting it, you know. The brainwashing has been short-circuited, at least to a certain extent. So now it is tempting to think like, yeah, there's actually, and you know, the polls, right? You could point to polls or point to the comments section on any news website. There's certainly a lot of sentiment active, people who are agreeing with us, right? So now it feels like, now there's a little bit more of a feeling of, just like I know you live across the country from me, right? You're far away. And there's a lot of people like that. I'm on Full House with guys that are all over the country. We have our own local group of people that are right in this area. So in a lot of ways, there's encouraging things. But even so, these types of conversations, you can only go take people so far with them. You try to plant the seed, no doubt, just like it was planted in my heart and mind many years ago, and I began to learn things.
No one emerges fully formed like Athena from the mind of Zeus, right? It's always right. It's always one, yeah. You know, it's
development.
I don't know that I've ever shared this before, but I'll, you know, very briefly kind of give a like how I ended up here sort of thing. I was a conservative. I hated Bill Clinton because he was a moral reprobate and a bad person. And that's still true to this day. He's still a moral reprobate and a bad person. And I became a libertarian after watching, the Republicans just screw up and screw up and screw up and screw up. And I started reading, like Mitch's Mold Bug and stuff like that in 2005 or 2006. And then I started reading traditional Catholic stuff because the stuff I was seeing from like John Paul II and other like, well, wait a minute. Like if we're, you know, like if we want a Catholic society, this religious liberty stuff has got to go, right? Like it's incompatible with the faith, really. Right, because there's no such thing as a secular society. We live in a society that's Satan, you know, satanic,
right?
Religiously satanic, right? Like this is not
a, yeah,
this is not a, yeah. a, you know, this is not like me casting pejoratives. Like it's literally religious,
literally
satanic,
you know, more and more outrightly so.
Yeah. And nakedly so, you know, non serviam as the whole of the law. Like you know, we got women bragging about their abortions. Like you should be arrested for that. Like you're a murderer, sure. You know?
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I discovered the true faith, right? And I became a traditionalist, and then that made me more politically conservative because I understood that, like, no, the a society has an obligation to the common good, and in order to do that, right, like the state and the church must work together towards the common good, and that's going to include things like suppression of, you know, making pornography illegal, for instance. You know, making abortion illegal, making and you know, arguments for more freedom, like they don't watch. Like you don't have the freedom to do that. You don't have the freedom to enslave people. You don't have the freedom to, you know, do all these things. And who's doing it, right? You know,
yeah.
It's all Jews behind pornography. That's not me saying that. That's right. Them saying it. Right. It's all Jews behind contraception. Like Jews invented contraception. That's not, you know, Jews are behind abortion. Jews are behind the gay rights movement.
The majority of people, it's just the nature of the masses is like feminine, for lack of a better word.
Right. And if COVID hasn't taught you anything, it's that the vast majority of people, right? If you're listening to this, congratulations, you're like a spiritual aristocrat. But if COVID hasn't taught you that, like, you know, whatever delusions of libertarianism I had, and I was not a libertarian by, you know, 2020, but like that put the nail in the coffin. Like most people do not want to be free. It's too much work, right? How many thousands of pages have you read learning for yourself? Like Alphonsus de Liguori is hard work, right? St. Thomas Aquinas is hard work. Like you have to sit down and you have to think really hard and it's slow going and, you know, like, or, you know, Mein Kampf is a great book, but it's not like, you know, an easy book to read. You know, you got to sit down.
No,
you know,
you have to study it.
For my legionnaires, by Cordiano, is not like these are good books. These are, you know, necessary books.
Most people are not going to read them. And that's why we cannot allow by the chances of democracy that our enemies can take power. And that's the thing about the Catholic faith. If you ever talk to somebody who is a Protestant, especially, and they might be a very well-meaning person, very virtuous, and they study the scriptures and stuff like that. But if we get into the point of arguing about it, I said, like, how is that any kind of model of Christianity? I remember my uncle, he worked his entire life in the steel mill. He was the most senior man in the steel mill. And he had like 48 years on the job when he retired. Maybe it was even more than that. It was something ridiculous. And he went to mass multiple times a week. He never read the Bible. He, you know what I mean? He was like a grug. He was a grug guy. But the church was there, right? And he went to mass. He said his prayers, those types of things. He was there on the holy days. Maybe even went a few times per week extra. That is how faith is, because until the printing press, no one had Bibles, right? And a lot of people were illiterate too. So if faith is by reading the Bible and figuring out the Bible,
then wait, the first 1500 years, right?
Like how do you do it? No, it doesn't make any sense. Christ never said go write a book. He told his apostles go and preach. So that, and even Hitler points that out in Mein Kampf, the spoken word is more powerful than the written word.
Well, that's why podcasts are so, and why radio, and I've talked about this before, but right.
Yeah. Radio.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why, Gerald L. K. Smith and, Father Coughlin were so powerful, right?
Oh yeah. Father Coughlin. Yeah.
And here's why, right? So, when you hear something, to use an example. So there's the Nixon-Kennedy debates, right? Everyone who watched it thought Kennedy won.
Right.
Everyone who listened thought Nixon won.
Yeah, because his ideas were better, but Kennedy came across as more self-assured and comfortable.
Right, Nixon had and powerful. To shave or had a 5 o'clock shadow and was tired. Was
sweaty.
And,
yeah.
Right. And you have to engage your mind when you're listening to radio, right?
Yeah. Yes, it's purely about the ideas.
When you listen, you know, faith comes by hearing. You listen and you hear mm-hmm. the arguments.
Yes.
And well, you have to engage your brain, and there's no sleight of hand or like, let's fool you with this imagery like in television.
Right.
And so that's why kind of radio or podcasts are inherently a right-wing medium, right? Like, because I'm sure you've listened to the occasional like lefty podcast, right? And it's just mm-hmm. emotional blabbering, right? There's no arguments to anything. No. It's just like, no. Well, that's really mean and not fair. Why are you so mean? It's like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
If I'm mean, like, is it true or not? Yeah. And
right.
To your point about your uncle, right? Like, it is immoral and unjust to expect someone to have to be able to understand esoteric political texts and find, you know, the rabbit hole of this one obscure website that is 8 links down, you know, on the 8th page of Google, yeah. like in Sanskrit, you know, like before yeah. they can be saved.
And, right.
And, or come to a sensible political conclusion. And, you know, you shouldn't have to be someone like you or someone like me in order right. to
no, how does the average person, how does a regular person, how do families attend church and those children are groomed up to be, you know, saintly Catholics? And I mean, you know, if Christ did not establish a church, then what is the point?
Yeah. Not only, and that church, right, in order to maintain the true message, it can't change its mind every 10 years.
No.
Right.
Right. And even if there were, let's say there was a pope that was a drunk, and I guess maybe there might have been one or two like
that.
Well,
there were several that were drunks. Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. But he's not telling us be a drunk. He would probably say, do as I say, don't do as I do. You know, he's not, right. Alexander not promoting.
VI was a horrible person, but he wasn't a horrible, like he wasn't teaching. Like,
he was still a Catholic. He was a Catholic person.
He was just a bad person who happened to be Catholic. Whereas these modernists, these, you know, like they're
promoting
a full set of a contest. I adhere to the position that Benedict the 16th was probably the last legit. I don't attack set of a contest. Like if I go to my final judgment and I'm told there hasn't been a legit pope since 1958, I'd be like, oh, okay. Or I get told, you know, like John Paul II and Benedict XVI were legitimate popes, but they were terrible. I'd be like, oh, okay. But this notion that men who lie have some sort
deceive,
of
worse, even
deceive
worse.
About the faith, deceive about
morals. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like that I have to follow them because they're wearing a pointy hat. Like, no. No, that's not true at all.
Yeah. Well, I'll say one thing quickly about the sede vacantis. Now, I don't like even putting like a special term, you know, and when I got interested in the traditional Catholicism, it was in a tiny little, I'll use the term very loosely, chapel. It was a storefront that had been turned into a chapel. And if you were sitting in it, you might think like, wow, this is a really beautiful little chapel that I'm sitting in, but in reality it was probably like a, you know, a drugstore or a dime store or whatever. And on the outside it did look like that, you know, and so people would say, well, like that's not even a real church. All right, well, whatever. But and they were sued by the diocese so that they had to for instance take out their listing in the Yellow Pages was under independent churches. They couldn't list themselves as a Catholic church. So I don't know if that was, you want to call that sede vacantis or not, but that's kind of how I came in into this thing of the traditional Catholicism. And I do certainly would not say that that's a panacea, because there eventually were kind of a couple of strange situations that I don't need to go into now. Maybe we, if we keep talking about this, I don't mind talking about it later. There was a couple of weird situations where you could see, like, well, if this was under some kind of oversight of a diocese, like, this wouldn't be going on. But neither here nor there, whether somebody is a calls themselves a sedevacantist or someone is trying to be a good Catholic and they go to the diocesan mass in their neighborhood or something like that. If you are any kind of good Catholic, whatever you call yourself, none of us are obeying the Pope like he's a Pope. So essentially,
you
in practice,
yeah, like, you don't treat him like he's the Pope. Like,
yeah, Bishop. Historically, a Pope is a very powerful thing,
right? And yeah. Well, and Bishop Sanborn, Bishop Donald Sanborn, this Sedevacantist bishop, mm-hmm. you know, who I've learned an awful lot from. Mm-hmm. About 10 years ago, I started. They opened a YouTube apostolate, mm-hmm. and I learned a bunch about the traditional faith from these guys.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, say what you will about the Sedevacantists. I don't entirely endorse their position, but I will say this: they're trying to live Catholic lives in a way that you know, most Novus Ordo people aren't. And
My reservation with them, the reason I would not just say, oh, yes, I'm a Sedevacantist and I follow that scene or something, is they also have problems, too, because like they have a very well-defined and neat position. I mean, now that, you know, you're getting the sense that I kind of have my own reservations against it, but because what does that put me in the position of is so I go in it. And by the way, these Sedevacantists fight with each other constantly too. So let's say I go to a Sedevacantist church and I look at my wife, we look at each other. That doesn't sound right. So now it's all up to me again, isn't it? It's all up to me to decide what is orthodoxy. And my point is, and I'm not trying to take away that what they're doing is good. I listen to, let me just quickly plug a traditionalcatholicsermons.org, you know, traditional Catholic sermons, all one word, .org. Bishop Sanborn is on there as well as many others. A lot of great stuff on there. Check that out. But the thing is, the point I would like to make about this is these modernists have done far more damage than even we or Sedevacantists are willing to admit, because being a Sedevacantist is that might be the best thing to be, but as in no way like a good thing.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not a theologian. I'm just a dad. I'm trying to do my best.
Dad with a webcam.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Like I'm just trying to do my best to, and I pursued this project because I know that you've felt similar. We've talked in the past. Like, the only reason I do any of this is that when I die, I have to be able to look at my children and say, I tried to mm-hmm. give you civilization, like Western, mm-hmm. white Western Christian civilization. And if it was taken from you, it wasn't because your dad didn't fight for it.
Right. Yeah.
That's
exactly
right. You know, I can't, at the end of my life, I can't tell my children I just didn't fight it at all. You know, because I, you know, oh, it was scary or whatever. Like, no, like I have to be able to tell my children, like I tried to give you, you know, something to pass on. And
well, the thing that you can give them, and it's just the thing, like I've attempted through the years, different people, whether it could even be coworkers, which I would advise caution on, you know, but whatever walk of life, whether relatives, neighbors, friends, your own children, the thing that's lacking for many people is a framework for dealing with our current situation. Like they literally, just like in that book 1984, where they took out words, right? So now people cannot express certain ideas. This is where we are, is that people, they cannot. So then that's where you get into this thing, like a guy's really fired up and he knows all the things that are wrong. And he says, you know what the answer is? Trump. You're right. That's not the answer.
Right. And it is precisely because the biggest problem we have isn't the, you know, evil people in high places. It isn't the mass apostasy. It isn't These are all, you know, major problems. It isn't the billions of foreigners who want to come here and the million, tens of millions or hundreds of millions of foreigners who have invaded our nations. It isn't that, you know, the Jews at the top of our society, you know, getting our children, you know, attacked, killed, and raped all across Christian civilization, you know, starting wars, you know. Those are all major problems. I don't want to downplay any of these issues. The problem, to my mind, the biggest problem we have is our people perish for a lack of knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if every dad was listening to Full House, right? If every man, every traditional Catholic man had a solid crew of local guys that he could count on.
Yeah. Right.
Then all of our problems would be solved because
basically, yeah.
Right. You know, we don't have enough workers. Well, if every white woman has four kids before she's 30, like, boom.
Oh man, we'd have workers. Yeah. That would not be a problem. These illegals would be showing up and they'd turn around and go back because there's no jobs for them.
Right. And you know, there'd be plenty of, like, your children would have, like, they'd have their pick. There'd be, you know, 10 possible, you know, wives for your sons and a dozen possible husbands for your daughters, and the schools and the hospitals would be full of brothers and nuns who work for cheap, you know, and healthcare would be cheap and schooling would be cheap and, you know, all of that, right? Like that, this is not right. But because our people have been lied to.
Yeah.
So much. And this is the specialty of the Jew is lying at mass scale in a convincing way. Right.
Right.
You know, Justinian, if we just went back to the Code of Justinian and banned them from, like, teaching finance, the media, and medicine or something, I think there was like four or five things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
90% of our problems solved overnight.
Right.
Because there wouldn't be feminist propaganda telling girls that they can be, you know, 42 and then have one, you know, like there would be race mixing propaganda with all the natural redheads and blondes with the, you know, black husbands on the television, right? Like,
Well, one thing I, you know, to somebody who is awakening to white nationalism, like I said, just like with the Catholic Church, you know, there has to be a sobering moment about how bad it is or what our real position is, you know, and even with the white nationalists, I would say, okay, it's great. Yeah. White power. I'm for Hitler too. Yeah. All good stuff. But I want you to understand before World War I, every single Western nation was a white supremacist society. Every single one. You know, in the U.S., you had your separate drinking fountains and back of the bus and separate schools and all kinds of things. And all of these white supremacist nations decided to murder each other. So,
yes,
we can't just go back. We need a new mentality, a new way of looking at our fellow white man.
Well, it's, and you know, like I get the temptation to want to like wear tweed and like live in England in 1910 because it was a glorious civilization. It was the height of civilization. England in 1911 at the funeral of King Edward the Peacemaker. They just published the 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica with literally all the world's knowledge in it.
Yeah.
I've brought it up in the past and earlier in the show, but like at that time, almost everyone in the world was under the dominion of white Christians.
Yeah. Right. And of course the British society was a wonderful thing because they were able to raise these big families in the abbeys that they took over from the Catholics. If you ever like this show, Downton Abbey, you know, that's how they were able to get, you know, leapfrog their entire civilizations on the backs of the Catholic property and culture that they appropriated.
Of course. But right. The thing that needs to be understood then is we can't go back. We can't just say, well, we need to go back to that. right? Like,
yeah, we could take a lesson from it, but we have to go forward.
Right. And you know, the people who like James Lindsay, who just want to go back to the 90s, is, well, like, okay, well then we'll just end up here again in another 20 years.
Right. Yeah.
Like, in another 25 years from now, if we went on the pack, you know, back to party like it's 1999.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Right. In 25 years, we'll just be here.
Right.
Because your axioms and your, you know, if you don't like stop worshiping Martin Luther King and like disavow his holiday and like, you know, the only thing that people should do with Martin Luther King is mock him. Yeah. Right.
Rest in piss.
Yeah. Like he's a terrible person. He was a horrible person. He was a violent communist agitator, sexual pervert, you know, wife beater, whoremonger. You know, whoremongers don't inherit the kingdom of heaven, according to St. Paul. Right. I think he was, you know, a bisexual communist. You know, like a drunkard.
Typical
like,
representative of his kind.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you know, like just sexually profligate. Stanley Levinson, right, was, you know, he plagiarized everything, half of everything he ever wrote.
Yeah.
Stanley Levinson, you know, was his bad man, handed him money from you know, from the Soviet Union and right. So he was just a front. And you have to. So the wanting to go back without changing the conditions that put you where you where you ended up is just, you know, it's like rewinding a movie and watching the same movie over and over again. You have to change the conditions, and the only way out is through, because you have to tell people and why I don't shy away from saying, yes, you know, I don't have a problem with Hitler. I have no problem, you know, call me a fascist, I don't care, is until you understand the central myth of our society right now isn't, you know, the war between the states or the American Revolution, it's the Holocaust. That's the basis of our civilization now. You know, Bishop Williamson, God,
the founding myth.
Right. You know, God bless him, Bishop Williamson, you know, pointed out that, like, it's the new religion. Oh, my God, 6 million. You know, that's the new religion.
6 gorillion.
Yeah. You know, like, in gas chambers, you know, like, this, it has replaced Christ on the cross. And these Jews have lied about everything and put themselves at the heart of our civilization. And if you're going to like if you're going to get to a genuinely Christian civilization again, you're going to have to reject all of the things like the second. And you've seen it over the, you know, probably 10 years we've known each other, but I know, you know, this from your previous years of activism, right? The second you say anything, even remotely right wing.
Yeah.
It's no more than 3 steps to Hitler.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Because coming.
The second you say, well, I think that, you know, let's say that you come into a windfall and you have a little bit of money and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to send all my kids to a good, solid Catholic school. I'm going to spend the money. I'm going to make the sacrifice. I'm not going to buy myself a nice car. I'm going to send my children to a solid Catholic school so that they can receive a full and real education in the faith.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if at that Catholic school you say, well, we only allow, you know, faithful families of, you know, where mom and dad are together and, you know, preferably 3 or more kids. Right. And, you know, like, and mom and dad have to be able to pay for it. And so, well, then there's no black kids in this school. Well, that's not our problem. Right.
Just like the meme. I know.
Well, well, there have to be black kids in this school. Why? Well, because if you keep blacks out, that's Hitler.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Left has really overplayed that whole thing. But now, I mean, that Hitler thing is just, it's all over the place.
And then you... But that's their devil, it could be purely there is a standard that, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas' Academy for Smart Boys and Girls, right? It costs $10,000 a year per student. And, you know, your parents have to be married and they have to be faithful traditional Catholics. And they have to be able to, you know, in order to even get into the school, you have to be able to, like, say your entire rosary in Latin and what have you, right? say whatever you want,
yeah.
Right? But the second you set any kind of standard at all, right, that the ability to meet that standard is not going to be evenly distributed across races because the races aren't equal. Mm-hmm. And the second that, you know, like this school that requires everyone, this hypothetical school that requires everyone to be, you know, parents to be married and, you know, for you to pay for it and what have you, there aren't going to be any black kids in the school because black people don't get married and stay married. Right.
Well, this whole thing presupposes you live in a society with all these other races in it, you know.
Right, yeah.
And that's where, you know, you have to keep stepping back to get to the right starting point.
Right. But the second you set that standard, whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is. It could be like show up on time. Something as simple as that. Well, that's racist. So, well,
yeah, racist, show up on time.
Right now,
that's a thing for sure.
Yeah, they've talked about this, that, you know, showing up.
Yeah, that's part of helping blacks succeed is by letting them start later or like whenever they want, not insisting on perfection. These are all marks of white supremacy, don't you know?
Yeah, of course. Well, if a class starts at 8 and you don't get there, you know, if you kind of wander in at 8:45, like you missed all of math class. You're never going to like you missed all of English. Because, right, like first class of the day is English. You get there at 8:45. You missed English class. Like, that's just, right?
Yeah.
But any kind of standard, races aren't going to meet them equally. Men and women aren't going to meet them equally.
Yeah.
And if you don't.
That's why men and women shouldn't be educated together either. That's also a hallmark of the Christian and Catholic education was boys and girls are educated separately, which was a great boon for both sexes.
Of course. Yeah. And I wish we could go back to that.
Yeah.
You know, like teenage boys, they can get distracted by, you know, like just
anything,
like, yeah. Anything. Like a girl can walk through the hall and they can just be like,
yeah,
I smell girl. And then like, it doesn't even have to be like not looking at them, not, you know, having them boyfriends and girlfriends in school.
It just alters the whole dynamic of this social dynamic. Yeah.
And, and the vast majority of our supposed leaders lie about this stuff. That's really important, whether, you know, sex segregation in education, right? Or and until you just step over things like the evil of Nostra Aetate and the evil of the Jews, right? It's right there in the scriptures. They're children of Satan.
Oh yeah,
they're accursed literally for all time. You know, that they not me, them. They said, let his blood be upon us and our children.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they're deicides. So until and you know, you have all these conversos like Trent Horn or Michael Lofton or Simcoe Fisher who come into the church with the waters of baptism aren't even dry on their head, and they're already like trying to tell Catholics what to do. It's like, no, you're Jews. You don't get to talk.
Well, and unfortunately, this is not a problem that just started a few years ago or something. Even in the late Middle Ages, you had Jews like Paul of Burgos, who had himself made an archbishop or a bishop, and then his sons, don't ask me how all these people, you know, had wives and sons. He had his sons made into bishops and priests, and he wrote a lot of commentaries that also, you know, began to plant certain seeds even from that time.
Of course. Right. Every single time. So, right. Like,
well, it makes me think of Christ said the kingdom of God is like a great tree and the birds of prey roost upon it, you know? So there's something about the kingdom of God that brings these unclean birds to take roosting in it.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And you know, it's really important that the church teach in and out of season the full truth, not because, like, I like hurting people's feelings or I'm just, you know, a horrible person. That's probably true that I'm a horrible person, but but because if you don't adhere to this standard, Satan doesn't care how he gets you. He just wants to get you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the truth is a narrow balance beam and you can fall off either way. But if you don't tell the truth about the Jews define themselves in contradiction to our Lord Jesus Christ. You know, in order to be a Hindu, you do not have to hate Jesus.
Right.
In order to be a Buddhist, you do not have to hate Jesus. I mean, you might not believe in him, but you don't have to hate him and reject him necessarily. Right? Like, you might just be born a Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not inherent to your identity that Jesus Christ is in a, you know, the daughter of a prostitute and or the son of a Roman soldier and a prostitute.
Yeah, Pantera.
Right, yeah, right, and he's not boiling in a vat of semen or poop or whatever in hell for eternity, right? Like, but to be a Jew is
you do believe that
God.
Yeah.
Right? Not the God, the Father. This, you know, so many Catholics are so poorly catechized today that they think that, like, you know, that Israel, when Israel is mentioned in the Bible, that it means that it means, like, the you know, the illegitimate nation state on the shores of the Mediterranean that couldn't survive without tens of billions of
U.S. This is an interesting point. You know, through my years, I've dealt with the Christian identity people, and a certain percentage of them, they reject the idea of the Trinity, which we know that that's a horrible thing to ever say. But when I finally was able to question somebody, they raised an interesting point that does give their point a little bit of illumination. And you see it now, especially, because now what does Bergoglio say, or other, just about anyone in the Catholic Church, they would say, oh, well, the Jews, you see, they have a relationship with the Father. And the Muslims, same thing. That's an Abrahamic faith. They have a relationship with the Father. So even though they don't have a relationship with the Son, they do worship the same God because they worship God the Father. No, that is false. And because of a misuse of the idea of the Trinity, they make that type of argument.
Right. Well, you cannot worship the Father without worshiping the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Exactly. They are one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, and it's right in Genesis, right? We will make man in our own image. Why does he use the plural? Why doesn't he say, I will make man in my own image?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because from the beginning in the creed, consubstantial with the Father from the beginning, right?
Yeah, there's these multiple so-called persons within the Godhead, right. and some
it's
people
a mystery
don't like
so profound
that
we can't understand it. Like it's the central stumble.
Some people don't like that term Trinity because of that idea. But I would say no, you are believing in the Trinity. You just don't like the way it's misused, and to that extent, I can actually agree.
Well, and this is why the clear teaching is so important, because if you teach badly, if you teach lies, then you're going to shoot your credibility down, and you're going to make getting to the truth that much harder. So, like, Bernard Cardinal Law was Cardinal Archbishop of Boston for many, many years, but before he was Cardinal Archbishop of Boston, he was the bishop of Southern Missouri, and before that, he was a priest in Mississippi, and he was a civil rights activist, right?
Mm.
Well, why is it that all these civil rights activists are also all the homo protectors?
Amazing how that works.
Right? Like he moved around priests that did the most unspeakable things you can possibly imagine and just didn't tell anybody about it, right, for decades.
Yeah.
Why... You know, like, well, wait a second, you know, Bishop, Eminence, you know, like, why do all of these, you know, left-wing you know, bishops and cardinals who are, you know, would excommunicate you and me the second they, you know, like, right.
Those guys, you're out.
Yeah. But they have no problem with faggots who rape little boys.
Yeah. Because they would do it themselves. They probably do it themselves.
Oh, probably. You know, I mean, yeah. McCarrick, right? Like, McCarrick was Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, D.C. at the same time that Dennis Hastert was Speaker of the House. And they're both faggots who rape little boys in the same town at the same time. If you think that those two guys didn't know each other and know their own and their mutual proclivities for those vile sins that cry to heaven for justice, I have a bridge to sell you. If you think that McCarrick and Dennis Hastert didn't know each other and know that they were both, you know, Satanist homosexuals who abuse kids.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just, you know, pull the other one. It sings Dixie. Yeah. And this is what these people have to understand. Traditional Catholics have to understand is only why, like, if you're going to have the power of a state to resist, if you're going to resist these evil people in high places, you need the power to do that. You can't do that from your little, like, distributist farm that makes artisanal widgets. You need a powerful intercessor. You need the state. You need government power. You know, look at all the priests Hitler locked up.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jones talk about, why did Hitler lock up all those priests and Catholics? Because they were all heretics and homosexuals and communists.
Right.
Look at them. Like, look at the guys. Like, oh, so-and-so thrown in jail for abusing kids. Well, I wish the U.S. government, you know, like, if the FBI wasn't a vile criminal organization set out on destroying white people and destroying Christians, they'd go after the USCCB for human trafficking.
Lock them all up. Yeah.
Lock them up. They'd investigate them at least.
Why and not? That's where I push back a little bit on these trad Catholics, where they're, you know, it's everything was great till Pius the 12th, right?
Well, how did we get here?
It was better maybe before then, but that doesn't mean all these things were not already in play, because, like, I would go back to that 1791 with the release of the Jews from, you know, their the emancipation of the Jews.
Right. Well, Napoleon in 1791, Napoleon emancipates the Jew.
Right.
Within 20 years, the Rothschilds had taken over Europe.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, by Waterloo in 1816. Right. I forget when was Waterloo.
Yes. There's something like that.
I mean,
I'd have to look it up.
I'm looking it up right now. So, like, but within two decades, right? Like, you know, Rothschild lied about who'd won Waterloo, and then used that to leverage everything and take over England, and from there, taking over the Bank of England, right? He destroyed the whole world.
Yeah, and, sure did.
And you know, like in our own country, right? I've 18 June 1815, right? So 1791, not even 30 years. So by 24 years, right? In America, right? Brown v. Board gets decided in 1954. 15 years later, in 1970, Negroes are rioting all across America, setting teachers on fire, raping teachers, tearing girls' clothes off in the hallways, grabbing them sexually, you know, lighting teachers on fire, beating teachers up, stealing from, you know, murdering people in American schools. So, like, you know, by your fruits you shall know them, some guy said one time, right? Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If this emancipation of the Jews in 20 years, you know, and you can call me paranoid, you can call me a religious whack job, I believe 100% that Jacob Rothschild had supernatural assistance in all of his dealings. Like, I believe that he dealt sure. with demons, and I believe that they gave him earthly power.
Sure.
100%. I see what he was able to accomplish and how evil he was. And I no other conclusion seems to me to make any kind of sense whatsoever.
Right.
And until you're willing to say that, like, Jews can commune with demons, you know, and why is it that Saint Simon of Trent and William of Norwich, right? I think it's William of Norwich, right? Mm-hmm. In an era perhaps. When the average person might go on a pilgrimage to Rome or Jerusalem once in their life, and almost everyone mm-hmm. lived and died within the same 10-mile radius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is it from England to Greece and from Russia to Portugal, there was all the same rumors of Jews killing Christian kids and using their blood for Passover?
Sure. I remember my grandparents used to say something like that. They would, you know, they would, there's the famous place in Chicago is called Maxwell Street. Maybe you've heard of it. And it was kind of like a lot of peddlers would be there, a lot of Jews and stuff. And my grandparents would say, oh, the Jews, they walk with those long coats, and that they could put a child in that coat and steal the children.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean,
right.
Like, well, either you believe what your Jews said about your ancestors, or you believe what your ancestors said about Jews. I choose to use honor the fourth commandment and believe that what the church taught and what my ancestors thought about Jews was true.
Yeah, it's just what the signal has gotten jammed, because then somebody who loves Jesus, well, but Jesus was a Jew, you see, and there were the good Jews, there were the bad Jews. And well, the Jews are God's chosen people, so of course we have to send them all kinds of aid and nonstop military equipment and everything else. And you know, they prosper over us because they're God's chosen people. And if you have no other way to read the Bible or understand religion, then you can't blame somebody for being constrained to that type of thinking. And then really, it's the perfectly good men that, like, guys we know that throw off religion, and in a way that's the healthiest reaction to that type of religion.
Yeah.
But you don't have to go too far back to see that there was in fact like a different mentality about it. And I have some quotes here from Mein Kampf. I'm sure you don't want me to just read on the air here, but
no,
I do have a couple
on the air all the time.
Okay. All right. I kind of don't like that when other people do it, so I'm always careful, or at least asked to do it. But just a couple of quotes. And now the way Hitler writes, or I guess Hess writes, right? But whoever wrote it, Mein Kampf, like any good book, especially an older book, the ideas are a little involved. And you can't read one or two sentences. You got to read like a paragraph. So anyways, here's one quote from book one, chapter 11. Aryan tribes, often almost ridiculously small, subjugated foreign peoples and stimulated by the conditions of life which their new country offered them, fertility, the nature of the climate, etc., and profiting also by the abundance of manual labor furnished them by the inferior race, they developed intellectual and organizing faculties which had hitherto been dormant in these conquering tribes. Within the course of a few thousand years or even centuries, they gave life to cultures whose primitive traits completely corresponded to the character of the founders, though modified by adaptation to the peculiarities of the soil. and the characteristics of the subjugated people. But finally, the conquering race offended against the principles which they first had observed, namely the maintenance of their racial stock unmixed, and they began to intermingle with the subjugated people. Thus, they put an end to their own separate existence, for the original sin committed in paradise has also been followed by the expulsion of the guilty parties. So just hold that thought in your mind for a moment. Let me read another one. That such a mentality may be, this is from book two, chapter two, that such a mentality may be possible cannot be denied in a world where hundreds and thousands accept the principle of celibacy from their own choice without being obliged or pledged to do so by anything except an ecclesiastical precept. Why should it not be possible to induce people to make this sacrifice if, instead of such a precept, they are simply told that they ought to put an end to this truly original sin of racial corruption, which is steadily being passed on from one generation to another? And further, they ought to be brought to realize that it is their bounden duty to give to the Almighty Creator beings such as He Himself made to His own image. One more real quick. France's activities in Europe today, spurred by the French lust for vengeance and systematically directed by the Jew, are a criminal attack against the life of the white race and will one day arouse against the French people a spirit of vengeance among a generation which will have recognized the original sin of mankind in this racial pollution. So from these quotes, this is not Hitler making this up or setting some novel thing. He's making a reference that he expects the reader to understand, because it was understood what happened in the Garden of Eden was in fact something other than eating an apple. And I wanted to add to this a scripture. We could go all night on this particular topic, but I just want to put in here one scripture. Of course, I got to find it real quick. Sorry about that. Would to God, this is 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Would to God could bear with some little of my folly, but do bear with me, for I am jealous of you with the jealousy of God, for I have espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear lest, as the serpent seduced Eve by his subtlety, to your minds should be corrupted and fall from simplicity that is in Christ. So he's making the allusion that he doesn't want us to be tricked out of our faith or out of our understanding. And he's comparing it to the real thing of Eve losing her virginity to a serpent. Now, an analogy is you're referring to one thing, and that's an example of something that is a real thing, right? Because otherwise, that does violence to the very idea of what an analogy is. So apparently, Eve was seduced by the serpent, and like Hitler says, amounted to this racial pollution, which was the original sin. And if you think this is like some non-Catholic idea, I'm holding here in my hand The Glories of Mary, one of the greatest Catholic books ever written, by St. Alphonsus de Liguori. And I can't even give him exactly the credit, because he's only quoting Irenaeus, or Irenaeus. How do you say it? That's the right way to say that.
Irenaeus,
yeah. And so if I could read this, I know I'm doing a lot of reading. I try to keep it to the point. But like I say, some of these thoughts are a little bit, they're embedded, and you have to get the full context. So he says, in the book of Exodus, we read that God commanded Moses to make a mercy seat of the purest gold, because it was thence that he would speak to him. Thou shalt make also a propitiatory of the purest gold, thence will I give orders and will speak to thee. St. Andrew of Crete says that the whole world embraces Mary as being this propitiatory, and commanding on his words, a pious author exclaims, thou, O Mary, art the propitiatory of the whole world. From thee dost our most compassionate Lord, speak to our hearts. And thee, he speaks words of pardon and mercy. From thee, he bestows his gifts. From thee, all good flows to us. And therefore, before the divine word took flesh in the womb of Mary, he sent an archangel to ask her consent, because he willed that the world should receive the incarnate word through her, and that she should be the source of every good. Hence, Saint Irenaeus remarks that as Eve was seduced by a fallen angel to flee from God, so Mary was led to receive God into her womb, obeying a good angel, and thus by her obedience repaired Eve's disobedience and became her advocate and that of the whole human race. If Eve disobeyed God, yet Mary was persuaded to obey God, and the Virgin might become the advocate of the Virgin Eve. The Virgin Mary might become the advocate of the Virgin Eve. And as the human race was bound to death through a virgin, it is saved through a virgin. So you see, he's Saint Irenaeus, and who is what, second century, third century? And Saint Alphonsus de Liguori, Saint Alphonsus de Liguori, 1700s, all understood this two seed line idea that something happened in the Garden of Eden there, and that's the result, or what we're living with now. When I was younger, I used to think like, well, there's Adam and Eve, you know, they had children, but then all of a sudden there's all these other people. Well, maybe God just made other people, but we know that that's not right. That's called polygenism. That's a condemned heresy. But, you know, there were other people that have a different origin. They are from below and we are from above. Like Christ said to the Jews, he said, you are from below. I am from above. So I have to put put my thumb in the book there, because I could just keep going on this idea all night, but I'm just trying to drop a few seeds there.
I don't know enough about CI, or I haven't read the works in question, so I can't comment on them. I can only observe the following. White men were told about Jesus and they adopted him wholesale. St. Thomas went to the Indians. Who's buried in Goa? St. Francis Xavier went to the Indians and they rejected Christ wholesale.
I've wondered about that too, because like some people say that St. Thomas thing is a little bit like a legend and maybe not exactly true. But before I heard more about that, I thought like, well, no, maybe the purpose was, see, Jesus Christ said, my sheep hear my voice, right? So maybe this was like to prove who was and who was not his sheep, because they didn't hear him, right?
Yeah, well, regardless, they've been given the chance multiple times. You know, the Japanese have accepted Christ in certain measures.
Certain numbers, yeah.
The Koreans, some Chinese. You know, like the higher people on Earth have accepted Christianity in much greater numbers than the lower people.
Right. And that's for sure.
That's just a statement of fact. You know, and anything good in Africa is a result of Archbishop Lefebvre's Holy Ghost Fathers, right? And even if you, friends of mine, like guys at Stone Choir, will say that all the sons of Noah were the same, they'll do the biblical literalism thing of like, you know, that the Africans are the sons of Ham, and you know, we're the Japhethites.
That's just not true. That's where you will lose like the sensible white man when you start to tell him that, because if you are with your wife and a black baby comes out, you don't go back to that woman.
Right. Well, but
right. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't, would you?
Probably not. except to pick up my stuff.
But it's not Ham that was cursed. It was Canaan that was cursed.
Well, anyway,
there's no curse of Ham.
Anyway, whether you think it's thousands of years of demon worship that caused the genetic stuff, or just natural evolution, or something else, right? You have to explain it somehow.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
You can't tell me that we're the same because we're clearly not. Right?
Right.
It, you know, they're only 15%, you know, 15 do 60, right? But
yeah.
Right. So, but you've seen it. You can give a ball to five little white children and they'll just like, they'll play all afternoon with that ball and they'll share. And there might be a little bit of fighting every now and again, you know, or something. But basically, like, you could take your children when you had small children, you could go to the park with your white children and they could play with other white children literally all afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then they'd have a new best friend and it's like, can we come back tomorrow? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Black children just, they're violent. I mean, they're dumb and violent. That's, I don't know how else to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And it starts early and it never stops. And
right.
the truth, right? We owe God the truth as best we can, right? Because it reflects his creation. And if we lie about his creation, we're lying about him. So we can't deliberately lie. We cannot know things because he's greater than us and we're limited creatures. But we can't deliberately lie about something that God has put forth in the world because then we're lying about God.
And, right. Mm-hmm.
And it's really important, I think, for all Catholics, especially traditionalists, right? You're right about religion. You can talk about the problems of Nostra Aetate and the new mass and all of that. And you're all 100% correct. I'm not, you know, I'm a traditionalist. I'm one of you. You can talk about the necessity of the Fatima and wearing the brown scapular and saying the daily rosary. And I'm not going to disagree with you about any of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're going to do if you insist on rejecting the regime's new religion, but then importing all of its politics, you will end up apostatizing from the true faith because you can't reconcile the two. Because if you don't reject Martin Luther King, you will end up worshiping false idols. You have to tell the truth.
Yes.
You have to tell the truth about race. You have to tell the truth about the destructive nature of the Jews. You have to tell the truth about the evils of feminism and the necessity of men and women being different. You know, these are all lies from the pit of hell. And if you don't fight all of it, you're letting the enemy in, and they'll, you know, the Galatians 3:28, right? There's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither male nor female, there's neither slave nor free in salvation, in Christ Jesus. Well, all of those are real things. And they were attacked, right? The neither slave nor free was attacked, and then the neither Jew nor Greek was attacked so that they could get to there is neither male nor female.
Right.
Right. And I'm supposed to pretend that, you know, Bruce Jenner, who won the most difficult athletic event in the world in 1976, the world's greatest athlete, is suddenly a pretty lady in his 70s.
What a sick age we live in.
Yeah, it's a disgusting, sick, weird, evil society that is basically openly worshiping Satan. And until you traditional Catholics out there, and I love you, and I want what's best for you, I'm risking, you know, Sam and I risk a lot to bring this sort of stuff to you, to do these sort of podcasts. That we have enemies that try and dox us and make us lose our jobs and want us to die. This is not
right.
I'm not trying to paint myself as some sort of hero, but honesty requires to admit that you know there are Antifa out there who hate and despise not only me, Jerome, as the host of this show, but anyone who's ever said anything true on any radio, on any podcast ever. They actively want to go after us. And the people who, you know, if you want what the true faith for your children, you can't buy the modern race egalitarianism. You can't buy the modern sex egalitarianism. You can't let the children of Satan into your home or wield power, or they'll or it will be destroyed.
I wanted to make one more little comment about The Glories of Mary by St. Alphonsus de Liguori. That little passage I read there, you know, I was writing an article about, you know, just some of the things I've read and some of the things I've learned. And I wanted to excerpt that paragraph from the book. So I thought, you know, in this modern age, certainly I can get an online version of The Glories of Mary, and I can copy paste, right, and save myself typing all that out. You know, I didn't give it really much of a thought. So I go on archive.org, I think is where I found it. I found very easily, quickly, a PDF version of Glories of Mary. So I just do a word search, you know, control F, look for the words, not finding it, searching it a few different ways, not finding it. I was doing it at work, just to be honest. I was, you know, taking a little break. And I said, oh man, I'll have to get home and look up exactly what chapter that is and figure out I'm missing a word, or maybe it's slightly reworded, or I don't, it wouldn't be that, I don't think. But so I go home, I get the exact paragraph where, which, you know, it's broken down into sections and verses, not verses, but like chapters and different headings. I go in there, I read it. And okay, so now I go to exactly the same place in the PDF. It's not there. That whole passage about the fallen angel seducing Eve, that's gone. It's completely gone. And it's replaced with a ridiculous thing. I was going to read it. Maybe I won't go into another reading here, but it's replaced with like nonsense, like all that's gone. So this, my book is from 1981, which is not that long ago, Glories of Mary, but and then I even went on a Catholic site where they had it. It's gone. That section is gone and it's replaced with absolute nonsense. Like here it says, and therefore Saint Irenaeus says that the divine word, before incarnating himself in the womb of Mary, sent the archangel to obtain her consent because he would have the world indebted to Mary for the mystery of the incarnation. And then this is the section that replaced that whole paragraph. Also, this is, I'm reading it word from word. Also, the idiot remarks that every blessing, every help, every grace that men have received or will receive from God to the end of the world has come to them and will come to them through the intercession by the means of Mary. All the stuff about the fallen angel, gone. It's gone. You have to have the old print book, like what I got, to read that. So don't tell me they didn't take that out on purpose. Everything else around it is fine.
That is a indictment.
It certainly is.
And you know, this show, Fundamental Principle, rests on two pillars. Honesty as best we can in the political realm, and honestly as best we can in the religious realm, because I think that you have to have both. And mm-hmm. You know, for listeners that might be offended, or might, you know, if you're coming from the political side, you know, understand that liberalism, capital L liberalism, as such, is the doctrine of Satan, and that you for can't sure. build anything good, true, or lasting, or good, true, beautiful on that foundation. And that, you know, if you're coming from the religious side and you understand the satanic nature of liberalism, then understand that the political side of you know, racial equality and sexual equality and the Jews being our, quote, elder brothers, this is all fruit of the same poison tree, and you have to reject all of it.
Yeah,
and I just, you know, Sam, you and I could go all night. I mean, you know, we could trade coins mm-hmm. back and forth. And I want to thank you personally for all your hard work and all your
my pleasure
and your friendship. Could you tell mm-hmm. the people where to find you real quickly, and then we'll close out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm on a show called Full House. It's a show for white fathers, but it's really just for anybody. But it's the idea is we're white fathers on there talking about stuff from that perspective. so you can contact me through the show there. I also do the Manor Bund Dispatch. There's a t.me/Manor Bund Telegram channel. And there's also a website, manorbund.us, that has the Manor Bund Dispatch shows on there. I've been doing those for the last, oh, maybe 7 months. I think we've done 10 or 11 of them. I am occasionally on White Noise Radio, which is a show that focuses on skinhead music. And in fact, I'm going to be doing very shortly a show for them, showcasing certain music. So, and you could find them, of course, on Telegram. There's no website or anything. Let's see, anything else. Thankfully, gratefully on this show tonight, and maybe sometime I'll come back if Jerome will have me anytime, at some point.
Anytime.
And yeah, there's a lot of points, a lot of interest. You know, it's very, it's invigorating to me. It's fascinating to me. Some of the things that you learn in scriptures, things that you uncover. I would just love to go through more of it and make certain points. But
we'll put a pin in it, as they used to say, and we'll continue the conversation later. Ladies and gentlemen, please give Sam's different outlets a check out. We'll make sure to link Full House and the other stuff in the post on Telegram. I want to thank you, Sam, for being here. I'm signing out, for the Fundamental Principle. This has been your host, Jerome, and thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Great.